This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge into Practice podcast, in which we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we are considering best practice when managing cancers of the thyroid gland. This series is accredited, so if you would like to receive CME credits, be sure to listen via our website at oncology.knowledgeintopractice.com. If you're listening on another platform, you'll find a link in the episode notes. This episode is supported by an educational grant from Eli Lilly, who have had no influence on the content or choice of faculty. In today's episode, we will discuss methods of tissue collection and useful molecular testing in thyroid cancer. To answer our questions on this topic, we welcome the expertise of Professor Frederik Penaud-Lorca. Professor Penaud-Lorca is Professor of Pathology at the University of Clermont-Ferrand and CEO of the Comprehensive Regional Cancer Institute Centre, Jean Perrin in Clermont-Ferrand, France. Before we jump into the interview, we'll spend a few minutes covering recently published literature and guidelines on this topic. If you're already familiar with this, please feel free to skip ahead to the interview at the 6 minute mark. Testing for thyroid cancer involves the use of ultrasound with fine needle aspiration cytology, also known as FNAC, to differentiate between benign and malignant thyroid nodules. However, when results are indeterminate, molecular testing for specific mutations can help determine if malignancy is present and increase the specificity of FNAC. Molecular testing can also help clinicians select appropriate personalized therapies based on the genetic drivers of an individual's tumor, refine cancer risk, and reduce the need for diagnostic surgery. NCCN guidelines recommend molecular testing for genetic alterations in differentiated, medullary, and particularly anaplastic thyroid cancer. Molecular testing is a rapidly advancing field, resulting in guidelines becoming quickly outdated and challenges for local implementation. For molecular testing to increase the accuracy of FNAC, it is important to collect high-quality tissue samples of adequate size and handle and process these specimens carefully. While FNAC is valuable due to its speed and minimal associated morbidity, it is limited by the accessibility of tissue and quality of tissue sampling in terms of size, depth, density, and location. This can lead to challenges when multiple tests are to be performed. Best practice CAP, IASLC, AMP guidelines recommend preserving maximum amounts of tissue for molecular testing rather than using tissue in the context of mutant-specific immunohistochemistry testing. Given the limited tissue available from biopsies, new techniques for molecular testing have emerged. One of these is liquid biopsy. By non-invasively sampling cell-free tumor DNA, which is shed into the plasma, simply by taking some blood, liquid biopsy can prevent the need to re-biopsy patients with inadequate tissue samples, potentially reducing costs and avoiding treatment delays. In addition, liquid biopsy can potentially provide enough circulating, non-localized tumor DNA to abrogate the issue of tumor heterogeneity. It can also be used serially, enabling its use in monitoring treatment response. And because it is quick and efficient, it can be used during treatment to detect acquired resistance mutations, even before clinical or radiographic progression. The speed of result turnaround with liquid biopsy may enable clinicians to receive results before the first consultation, which can optimize personalized treatment selection and prolong survival. In fact, the CAP-IASLC-AMP guidelines recommend that molecular testing results be available within 10 working days of receiving the specimen. Given the uncomplicated method of sample collection with liquid biopsy, this turnaround time is achievable and could even be reduced as the technology improves. However, it should be noted that recent recommendations for RET testing in thyroid cancer from ESMO in 2021 highlight next-generation sequencing of tissue specimens as the preferred option. Liquid biopsy has limited sensitivity, particularly for gene fusions, and is not currently recommended for standalone testing. Referring to guidelines can help optimize turnaround times for molecular testing. One of the recommended strategies involves open communication between clinical oncologists and molecular pathologists to enable preparedness for emerging genetic alterations in molecular testing panels. Additionally, Reflex molecular testing ordered by the pathologist at the time of initial diagnosis and coordination with molecular laboratories may maximize successful testing of specimens, accelerate the process, and provide a readily available molecular profile for the oncologist to use at first consultation. As molecular testing advances and more data are available to clinical oncologists, it is also important that clear, concise, and unambiguous molecular testing results are incorporated into pathologist reports. Lastly, having national policy standards and a sustainable public funding model may alleviate worry at many institutions about financial reimbursement for costly procedures. Having covered some of the basics, let's begin our discussion with our invited guest, here to provide us with an expert perspective on tissue collection for molecular testing in thyroid cancer, is Professor Penold Lorca, Professor of Pathology at the University of Clermont-Ferrand. So firstly, what challenges do you face in your clinic with regard to tissue handling and testing? For example, long turnaround times, insufficient sample size, lack of communication between the sampler and the pathologist?
I think that, first of all, what is important is to have a prescription for the molecular test from the multidisciplinary tumor board, or at least, if it's patient from our institution, to have an awareness of the patient's stage. Because in fact, if from the beginning we know that there is a suspicion of cancer, or if it is a known cancer that is resistant to treatment, we will anticipate that on the tissue management and on the sample acquisition. We will be very careful not to exhaust the tissue. So I think it's extremely important to have this information when we have the tissue. Then, of course, we know that we have a certain number of bottlenecks when it comes to tissue handling and testing for molecular testing. One will be also the reimbursement issue, because it could be also a problem. In my institution, an academic center, it's not an issue, but it could be an issue for patients coming from other hospitals. And one of the bottleneck will be the quantity of tissue. So sometimes in the context of thyroid tumors, we still have a fine needle aspiration specimen. So we know that with those specimens, we can do molecular testing if we have enough cells, but it's of course less material if we compare to a biopsy or to a surgical specimen of a metastatic lymph node. So all those things has to be discussed upfront with the medical team in charge of the patient, to ensure that we will not have any problems in the molecular testing, that we will have enough tissue, that we will have the information early enough to anticipate the technology, and also the information before starting working on the specimen, if it's a small specimen, to be sure that we are not going to exhaust the tissue.
What guidelines for biopsy and molecular testing of thyroid nodules do you follow in your practice? Do you make any local adaptations? For example, for patients for whom molecular testing is requested, time, type or frequency of biopsy?
In my institution, we follow local guidelines that are basically based on ESMO guidelines. So in fact, for thyroid cancer, if we have a diagnostic of medullary thyroid cancer, we know that this patient will be not in the molecular tumor board, but will be in the oncogeneticist consultation to look for RET mutations, and to see also if the patient has germline mutation. If we don't find any germline mutation, we will test the tissue to see if we have a tissue RET mutation that can occur in some some times. And if the patient has RET alteration, the patient will be eligible for RET inhibitors and also for family counseling. So this is for medullary thyroid cancer. And in fact, we screen for RET mutation, first of all, not for treatment, because for treatment it will be for refractory thyroid cancer, but early for the oncogeneticist consultation and for the family counseling. And it's not at the beginning in the pathology lab, but more in the oncogenetician hands. If we have a recurrent non-medullary thyroid cancer, we are going to screen for different type of molecular alterations, like BRAF, different type of BRAF mutations, different type of fusions, RET fusions, ALK fusion, ROS1 fusion, for instance. So for those patients, we will work on the FFPE specimen. It's desirable to work on the last sample, so on the sample at the metastatic stage when it's possible, so either biopsy or a surgical specimen of a metastasis. If it's not possible to get that, we will test on the primary tumor. And in this case, we will follow the guidelines. So usually, we are going to perform an NGS to look at the different alterations, DNA alterations, and RNA fusions. But if NGS is not available, so it's not the case in my hospital, but it could be the case elsewhere, sequential testing can be performed. And in this case, usually, you can start with the most frequent alterations, so BRAF mutations. And then, if it's not present, it's possible to screen for the fusions. And for that, FISH can be, so in situ hybridization can be an option, or RT-PCR, or refer the case to another institution for NGS testing.
So we know in your practice that you don't use liquid biopsy. Do you anticipate that this might be implemented in the future? In what scenarios might this technique be useful? For example, when disease is progressing and rapid results are needed to make treatment decisions, or in patients in whom the FNAC sample has been small.
We, in my institution, we don't routinely use liquid biopsy because we prefer working on tissue. But if we have a recurrent thyroid tumor and if the FFP specimen is not available or is in another hospital and it may take like 3 weeks or 1 month to get, or if the tissue that we have is exhausted, or if the patient is not eligible for a biopsy because, for instance, of anticoagulant treatments, if it's complicated to do a biopsy for the patient, liquid biopsy will clearly be an option. And in those situations, we use liquid biopsy. In some institutions where it can be complicated to have access to an NGS because there is no NGS in the hospital, so you have to refer the case to another hospital to perform the NGS, so you can have a longer turnaround time. Liquid biopsy could be also an option because if there is a rapid progressing disease, or for instance, in case of an anaplastic thyroid cancer, we know that molecular targets are rare in those type of thyroid cancer. But if the patient has one, so it could be like in 5% of the cases, it could be completely different for him. You could save his life. So this and those diseases are medical emergencies. So Liquid biopsy in those cases could be recommended also to have rapid results to make the treatment decisions.
What turnaround time do you aim for in molecular testing of patients with thyroid cancer? Is this turnaround time typically met, or are obstacles encountered in achieving it? For example, lack of testing equipment, specimens sent externally, lack of communication.
In my institution, once the molecular test has been ordered by the multidisciplinary tumor board, or if we decide to perform a reflex test because we have indication with the biopsy of the patient, meaning that we have the prescription of the biopsy and then it's written. In case of confirmation of metastatic thyroid disease, as this patient is refractory to iodine treatment, please proceed to molecular testing. In those cases, our turnaround time is maximum 2 weeks because we run NGS every Friday, so it's running during the weekend, and you will have the result the next Monday. So depending when you send the case, you will have the result within 1 week or 2 weeks. And we run in parallel DNA and RNA, targeted RNA sequencing, specific RNA sequencing for thyroid cancer, so looking to the major alteration in thyroid cancer. But this is the optimal situation in our institution. But of course, this can be longer. This can be longer if we have a technical problem, if we have a contamination, or sometimes we have a technical problem, so we can lose 1 week. It can be also a problem if it's a case referred from another hospital, because from the moment when the multidisciplinary tumor board decides that this patient needs a molecular evaluation of his disease, then they send it to the oncologist in an external hospital. The oncologist send a message to the pathologist from the, another structure. The pathologist has to de-archive the test, etc. Sometimes it takes 1 week or maybe sometimes 2 weeks. So it seems to be extremely long. But what is important is that when the sample arrives on the platform, it should be maximum 2 weeks. So this is really when we have those type of problem. And of course, if we don't have, when we receive the sample, if we don't have any information, any background from the clinician, if we don't know that it's refractory thyroid cancer, it could be a biopsy of a thyroid cancer at diagnosis, we are not going to run any molecular test. So, of course, if we don't have this information, the oncologist will receive the result and then say, oh, but I need a molecular test. And then you have lost 1 week or 2 weeks because of the lack of communication. So all those things should really be organized. And that's why it's very important to give information to the pathologist and also to have the multidisciplinary board decision very quickly.
How are the results of molecular testing of thyroid nodules reported to clinicians? Do you think this should be standardized across clinics and regions?
In my institution, we have standardized the molecular result for different type of cancer. So we give an explanation of what type of test we have used with a different indication about the machine, the kit, etc., because this is for quality assurance. And then we give the results. So for instance, we have found BRAF mutation, the allelic frequency, and then we add a sentence saying, this patient is eligible to BRAF inhibitors, or this patient, if it's a RET fusion, is eligible to RET inhibitors. So we don't give any name of drug or anything. We just put the eligibility for a treatment. And I think it's very important to standardize that type of results. I think it's important and mandatory to guide the clinician. Also, what is also very important is in case of absence of targets, we have to put a comment if the cellularity of the sample was low, because sometimes we have cellularity below 20% or below 10% of tumor cells in the sample. So we had a sentence saying the absence of targetable alteration, but due to the low cellularity, another test on another sample should be performed, because this could be a problem of level of sensitivity of the technique. And I think this is something that is very important because we don't want the patient to miss any opportunity of a targeted treatment due to lack of cellularity of the sample.
And finally, do you have any closing thoughts for clinicians?
So my message here for molecular testing in thyroid cancer is that communication between the medical team, the nuclear medicine team, and the pathologist is key, because tissue is really the issue, and we need to be able to discuss together in order to provide molecular testing results as exhaustive as possible and as quickly as possible.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't done so already, feel free to head over to our website at oncology.knowledgeintopractice.com, where you can claim your CME credits, and you'll also find other free educational resources in oncology. You can find a link to this in the episode notes, as well as all the references discussed today. If you enjoyed this episode, do subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app, or recommend us to your colleagues, and join us next month for our next episode in this thyroid cancer series.